It's been a year now since Oregon voters put a Republican in statewide office for the first time in more than a decade. Dennis Richardson won election as Oregon's Secretary of State. All other state-level offices are held by Democrats, and both U.S. senators are Democrats. Dennis Richardson ran for governor 2 years earlier and lost to John Kitzhaber, who then resigned a month into that term. Richardson had served in the legislature for 6 terms, representing a district generally north and west of Medford. Now he represents a whole lot more people with some very specific duties, including overseeing elections and audits. It's our first visit since his election. Secretary Dennis Richardson, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. It's good to be with you.
You promised to be an unconventional Secretary of State, and I've often wondered about that phrase, whether that meant that the previous occupants were doing something too conventional or something.
Well, when I was campaigning, I thought I knew what the job of Secretary of State encompassed, and I really was naive about it. I am working to be unconventional in that my goal is to ensure that people all across the state have greater confidence in the integrity of our election system, have greater help in their businesses through the Department of Corporations, that we have greater focus on civics in teaching civics to our kids through our archives division. I mean, there's so much that can be done. I want to be transparent, and I want to have greater accountability and just restore a greater trust in government. And one of the things that we've done is that we placed all of our expenditures online, and I've encouraged the governor and the treasurer to do the same, and so far they haven't followed suit. But I think that people need to have the ability, if they choose to go and see how we're spending their money, and not many people are actually checking it, but they know they can, and they know that we're being accountable and transparent. And so that's really the focus of what we're trying to accomplish.
Mr. Secretary, do you see yourself as sort of an administrator for the whole state, in a sense like the keeper of the framework of state government?
I really think so. I mean, the secretary is the one that makes sure that all the documents are handled in the appropriate way. I co-sign every signature on all of the bills and measures, all the certifications and the assignments of individuals that the governor makes. And so my goal really is to ensure that all of the documents are handled in a very professional way. Plus, we're the keeper of the Constitution. And one of the first things that I involved myself in was a program to restore the Constitution. I mean, yesterday was its 160th anniversary from when it was written. And it was written in 1857 because they had to take it back to Washington, D.C., and it had to be approved before Oregon could become a state in 1859. And so we've restored the Constitution. It was deteriorating dramatically. We now have cases that display the Constitution that are bulletproof, and the humidity and temperature are controlled, so that kids and families that come to the Capitol and to the Archives Building will be able to see the documents that helped establish our state and learn more about government.
There are lots of duties, as you mentioned, to the Office of Secretary of State, about which you profess to be being somewhat naive as a candidate. How long just to get acclimated to all the things the Secretary of State's office is responsible for?
Well, it took me about 3 months to really learn my duties thoroughly. I mean, I'm a very hands-on kind of guy, and I found that I had been elected to be essentially a CEO of a conglomerate, because the elections division really doesn't have that much in common with corporations, and they don't have a lot in common with the audits or the archives. Each had their own budget, their own mission, their own culture. And so to try and ensure that they don't just function in silos was a real challenge. My first 3 months I spent learning the duties and learning all about what's going on at every level in the 4 divisions of our agency. And then the next 3 months I was focused on trying to get a decent budget, because the legislature was in session. And the one control that is really exercised over my agency by the other areas of government is on the budget. Now that I have a budget, I'm really responsible just to the people and not to the governor or to the legislature, which gives me the independence to help ensure that we have an open, transparent government.
Dennis Richardson is the Secretary of State of Oregon, the first Republican in that position in many a year. He has been in office for, well, not quite a year. The election was a year ago. It's our first chance to have an extended chat with him about the duties of the office and how he's getting used to it. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. I would argue that the two most visible functions of the Secretary of State's office are elections and audits. And is either of those two more important than any of the other duties of the office?
Not really. I mean, they each are vitally important. We must have open, fair elections, and I've made it a key part of my work to ensure that every Oregonian who's eligible to vote has the opportunity to vote. And we're able to increase the number of registered voters who had been determined to be inactive and weren't going to receive a ballot. We increased that by 60,000 voters by changing the rules on when you become inactive. It just seemed it seemed kind of silly that you would be a registered voter, but if you hadn't chosen to vote in two general elections, you would become inactive and no longer receive a ballot.
And that was it, two general elections, 4 years, basically?
Well, it's 5 years, and so there would be other years. So after two, you would become inactive and wouldn't receive a ballot. You could still go to the county and get a ballot and ask for it. But I asked the question, because I was new, you know, why is it 5 years? Why not 4 years? Why not 6 years? And they said, well, it's always been five. And I said, well, show me the statute. And the statute says that a voter would become inactive if they haven't voted in at least 5 years. And I said, well, at least? What if it was 10? I mean, why should we determine the minimum that it would take to deprive a person of getting a ballot like everyone else once they're registered to vote, merely because that's what was in the statute. So with DMV and motor voting and the ability to help ensure that people are still living at the addresses that you know, that they were registered under, we have gone in and made the change from 5 years to 10 years, and it's restored a ballot that'll be delivered to over 60,000 Oregonians who otherwise would not be getting a ballot.
You know, I don't want to neglect our audience or remind them that it is an election day for some of us. There is, for example, a vote on the home rule measure in Douglas County. There are a bunch of money measures on the ballot, including a bond issue for the Phoenix Talent School District and some local issues on the California side as well. And we will have some coverage tomorrow on our newscast. Just want to make that clear. This is election day, but not a big one, not anything statewide for the state of Oregon. And I wonder, Secretary Richardson, if you can give us your view on the claims from the White House of massive voter fraud in last year's election, and tell us what cooperation your staff has given to the task force looking into it.
Oh, sure. Last January, I wrote a letter to President Trump explaining that you know, regardless of what he may think about other states, I've done the research, and in Oregon, we do not have widespread voter fraud. I've been going to every county, and I still am going to go to the rest. I will contact all 36. And it's the reality is you can't hack paper. And so the tabulation is all correct. I'm convinced of that. There's no involvement of the internet while votes are being counted and ballots are being processed. The internet is not involved until there's actually the results being reported by the clerk to the state, our office in elections for compilation. And then those clerks watch very carefully to make sure that the numbers that they presented are the ones that are attributed to their county. So the tabulation is fine. Since then, we've also worked on trying to ensure that the registration is also accurate. Oregon actually has been involved with four other states that actually to do a kind of a test project. And so the four other states and Oregon looked at the voter information on who voted last November and found that in Oregon there's 46 individuals who voted in two states, which is a crime. And six, I mean, it's an absolute miracle, six have continued to vote after they died.
Huh.
Incredible. I don't, the signature a bit of a problem, but you know, anyway, so we've looked very carefully at that. And there were two Oregonians that actually voted twice in, you know, like in different counties. And so those files, we looked very carefully to ensure that it wasn't just, you know, something that was a mistake. And the files have been turned over to the Attorney General's office to investigate them, because it's it's against the law to vote more than once, and we want the integrity of the system to be honored. Now, that's a very low number, by the way. That's only one out of 38,000 ballots. Mm-hmm. It's 0.002%. So even though there are some instances, it's very minor compared to the number of votes that actually take place.
Have you heard back from the Attorney General's office about the disposition of those cases?
No, not yet. Mm-hmm. They said, that's a lot of criminal cases. I said, yes, but it's important, and there's time. I mean, although this is Election Day and no election is insignificant to those that have measures, we will have the reports back by next year, so before the election next time.
Dennis Richardson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Oregon's Secretary of State in charge of audits and elections and the Corporation Division and the State Archives. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about his many tasks. A year since his election as the first Republican to hold statewide office in Oregon in quite some time. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. On the general issue of elections and voter fraud, is it your sense that there, I mean, other than the cases you referred to the Attorney General's office, that the reason that people are registered is because they just don't unregister at the place they moved from?
Well, there's many people that do that. I mean, that they have, there are still quite a few that get double ballots because they move and they don't change until just before the election, and ballots are sent by the counties. I don't think that it is a major problem in Oregon. It's just something that we need to always be trying to ensure the integrity of the system so that there's trust by citizens. It's not a partisan issue. Everybody wants a fair election.
And you mentioned about the fact that you can't hack paper, but the efforts to get into Oregon's election files appear to be a regular thing. I mean, a pretty constant thing, it sounds like.
It is absolutely shocking. I mean, and this number is very real. We have between 12 and 15 million attempts a day to kind of break into our system, and just in the Secretary of State's agency. And I mean, we have countries that we just don't allow to come into our corporations division. We have areas where, or websites or sources that we know to be corrupt. But we have that many attempts. There's just so much going on. I was shocked at that number. But we've got multiple layers of security. And if someone or some group does get through the first layer, they then are confronted with another layer. But our goal is to ensure the security of the people's information. And so, I mean, that's first priority, is to help protect the people, as far as I'm concerned.
Let's move from elections to audits, because you're also concerned about protecting the people's money. And the biggest news in state money of late is the money that Oregon may have to repay to the federal government over Medicaid. Can you explain what happened there?
Well, let me just say that the Oregon Health Authority has some huge problems. It was $74 million that was there was overpayments made because of the amount that's paid on Medicare is different than Medicaid. And so there was payments made that were at the higher level than they should have been made, and therefore they need to be reimbursed to the state government, or excuse me, to the federal government. Now, we have an audit report that's coming out in about 2 weeks on the Oregon Health Authority that makes that money look like chump change. I mean, it is absolutely shocking. I won't go into any details until the audit report comes out. But the amount of waste is just incredible. And part of our job is to, through the audits, to show the people what's happening with their money and to make recommendations to help improve the system. And so we've got a new director of the Oregon Health Authority, a really good and experienced individual who I think will make changes there. But it's a very difficult and wasteful organization at this point. There's just been a lack of good management and a tremendous waste of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Hundreds of millions. Okay, so we're going up into nine figures now from eight. Neither the governor nor the health authority is really owning the most recent issue as of yet. I mean, it's about, what, $67 million that might, 67, yeah, million that might still need to be repaid. What could help focus responsibilities? Are there any tools you have in your office that can help bring this to the fore, other than just to show the audits?
Well, just disclosure. Mm-hmm. I think that transparency is vitally important. For far too long, These agencies have not been accountable. There have not been the kinds of audits that we're doing where we're doing more than just merely saying, you know, if you did this a little better, things would be better. We're actually trying to say, what is the cost of this? And for instance, I just published a newsletter last week on an audit that came out a couple of weeks ago that involves the Consumer Employed Provider Program, CEP, and it's under Department of Human Services, under the Aging and People with Disabilities programs. And these are for primarily seniors who hire their own caregivers so they can stay in the home. But the challenge is that there's very little oversight. The caseworkers are way overworked and have far too many responsibilities. And so we have individuals that are not getting the care that we think that they're supposed to get, that they're supposed to receive. And I tried to find the total cost of what this program is. I could not get the information. The auditors were not given the information as to what the administration cost is for the field operations, the caseworkers, and the administration costs in the executive offices. They said, well, we just don't track that. And so they indicated there's about $28,000 per client or patient that's paid to their caregivers each year, but they had no information as to how much the program itself is costing. And so we're working to try and get greater cooperation and greater accountability, because these are the kinds of questions that just haven't been asked in the past. And yet I believe there's a cost benefit for everything, and that the people need to know what they're buying with their tax dollars and what, you know, what the benefit is. Because we shouldn't just assume because it sounds like a good program that it's really doing the job that it's intended to do.
Dennis Richardson, again, the Secretary of State of Oregon, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We have a couple of contacts here. Here's Pam and Dexter. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. Well, I'm really heartened by Seattle. The judge has upheld Seattle's voucher system, where citizens are given four $25 vouchers that they can sign over to candidates as kind of a counterbalance to big money influencing campaigns. I think that is the issue, not so much dead people voting as big money bribing politicians to do their will. As in Oregon, I think the timber industry has huge influence on our legislators. And I just wondered what you thought of it, being a Republican, and they're kind of known to be more into taking money, even though both parties do. But I think that's kind of the wave of the future is we need to have significant campaign finance reform in order to give people's basically their confidence in the system, because we know this has been an issue for way before Citizens United.
Sure, okay.
And
Pam,
I'll listen on the radio. Thanks
Pam. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Pamela, for the question. Certainly, it's important that we should realize that money is not a partisan issue. The public employee unions support the Democrats in their candidates in a tremendous way, and they kind of control a lot of what goes on in the building. And the Republicans have their sources of funding as well. I mean, so it's both sides have the problem. I'm in favor of campaign finance reform. I'm also skeptical on how to make sure that it works, because in some areas where you don't have, I mean, in Oregon, what we've got is full disclosure, that if you take money, you've got to disclose it. And you remember there was a presidential campaign, I think it was like 2002, a governor's campaign, where toward the end, the Republican candidate got, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 from an out-of-state donor. Mm-hmm. And it really hurt that campaign because it was all disclosed and people said, wait a second, you're not going to buy an election here. But the challenge is that if we say we're only going to allow so much per candidate, or the state will provide so much, then you have the big money operatives, and they do what's called shadow campaigns. And so they end up running their own campaign without even talking to the candidate, and they can use it to attack the opponent, or they can use it to promote the candidate that they like. But they're saying, no, we're not involved in a campaign. We're merely using our First Amendment rights, the freedom of speech. And so I'm always looking at, where's the hook? How can you ensure that it'll be implemented fairly? Now, let me say that I'm not a legislator, and so as a Secretary of State, I will implement whatever campaign finance reform the legislature and the governor signs. And so, but I would weigh in if I see that it could stack the deck on one side or the other.
We have a question here, too, from Stephen and Eugene, who says, if someone lives part-time in Oregon and part-time in another state, is it legal for them to be registered to vote both places as long as they only vote where they are living at the time?
No, they need to select their domicile. You can have multiple residences, but you have one place that is your domicile, and that's where you would register, and that's where you would vote, but it's not appropriate to register in more than one state.
Okay, there's your answer, Stephen and Eugene. Thanks for that. I have to ask before we go about your trip to China starting tomorrow, and first of all, what role does a Secretary of State have in making an overseas trip to discuss trade?
Well, it is going to be an exciting trip. I keep telling myself it's the 12th time I've gone, and it's a long flight. But the reason that I'm going is that, I mean, essentially Oregon doesn't have someone to represent the state when the governor can't be there. Other states have a lieutenant governor. In Oregon and in Arizona, we have a secretary of state who assumes that role. In fact, for decades, our secretaries of state have been members of the National Lieutenant Governors Association. You know, we're second in line if something happens, happens to the governor.
As did happen with one of your predecessors.
Yeah. It doesn't happen very often, but certainly that's how Governor Brown assumed her position. And so I'm going in that capacity to represent the state primarily at a huge event that's taking place in one of our sister city states. It's called Tianjin. And Tianjin is a city, but it's like a state as far as it's directly relating. It goes straight to Beijing and not subject to a province. And they they're opening a pavilion for e-commerce. And they are donating, because of our relationship, they're giving us 3 years of free space, over 1,000 square feet. And this is to promote Oregon companies to millions of Chinese consumers. So for the first time, small and medium Oregon companies will be able to show their wares and sell to a Chinese audience without having to spend the money that they don't have to warehouse a huge inventory of product. And so this is a major deal. There's just the cost of the space is more than $260,000 worth of benefit that we would have had to pay if we had had to do it like everyone else does.
All right. Dennis Richardson is Oregon Secretary of State, off to China tomorrow and looking at elections across the state today. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Take care.